good Super Bowl this year?
Ugh, no.
Why not? It was the one matchup where no matter who won, Republicans lost.
The 49ers, they've been good for, well, sort of off and on for 12 years, but never quite good enough to win the whole thing. And over that 12-year period, they've had a number of really bad, heartbreaking losses. And man, this one was right up there. I'm not sure it's number one, but if it's not, it's really close.
So I'm not a football guy, and I didn't watch a single frame of the Super Bowl. But wasn't, I forget where I heard the secondhand, but wasn't it a kind of like a, not a snooze, but it was kind of like equal give and take during the actual game itself, and therefore, like in overtime, it's just whoever happened to get the ball, or like whenever the time ended, that was most of it, right?
Yeah, I mean the first half was you know, somewhat uneventful, and it was really low scoring. So I think that's what I think people are referring to when they said it was a bit of a snooze. And then it's the scoring and excitement definitely picked up in the second half, especially the fourth quarter and overtime.
Yeah. And to the listener, this is not actually what I meant to talk about, but we'll entertain this for like another 90 seconds and then we'll get to the funny stuff. But no, my question is though, well, two things related to the actual contents of the game. I saw some type of new, so can you explain how overtime works to me? Because I saw something in passing. Again, don't know a thing about football, except that it's four quarters that should take an hour, but it doesn't. So there was a thing that I saw in passing where, like, not off the record or on the record, people who were on the 49ers said, oh, we don't know how overtime works. Or that's why, like, they thought maybe the game was over when they kicked their field goal. And then, like, in the last, like, 4 seconds, the Chiefs won. Please explain.
Okay. So, like, I'll break this down for you. So, the way that overtime used to work a number of years ago now is the first team who scored won. And it didn't matter what type of score it was. Even if it was just a field goal, you won.
But then, and real quick, wouldn't the point automatically be, let's get within 35 yards and just kick a field goal?
Well, so what ended up happening a bunch is basically whoever won the coin toss would win overtime, because you'd get the ball first. You don't really have to go all that far to get in a field goal range, and then that team would kick a field goal and win. So I forget how many years ago this was now. It's a number of years ago now. They changed the rule where, if you start with the ball and you score a field goal in overtime, you don't win. The other team gets the ball and gets a chance to, you know, either kick a field goal to retie the game or score a touchdown and win the game. Or if the first team who has the ball in overtime, if they score a touchdown, then they do win. So basically, you know, it's almost like the old rule, but now you've got to score a touchdown if you're the first team to get the ball in overtime and to win the game. So you with me so far?
No, I'm kidding. Yes. Okay. Yes, I am. But, and also, so, real stupid question. When you come back from overtime, you start at the 50 yard line, right?
No. So it's, you know, there's a regular, there's a regular kickoff. So,
oh, so it's not 50. Wait.
So now you start at the, if it's a touchback, like almost all kickoffs are now, you start at the 25.
What's a touchback?
When on a kickoff, when the ball goes into the end zone. And so there's no kickoff return.
Let's just say, okay.
Hey, that's not really important to all this. So, so that's been the overtime rule for, you know, a while now, in both the regular season and the playoffs. So then there was a really, really exciting Chiefs-Bills playoff game a couple of years ago, I think in like 2021. It was like this crazy game. And the Chiefs won the coin toss in overtime. They scored a touchdown. Game was over. Bills never had a chance to respond in overtime. And that got people talking, like, hey, when you've got these, you know, games, especially in the playoffs, you know, it seems kind of unfair that if a team happens to win a coin toss to get the ball first and they score a touchdown, the other team doesn't even get a chance to respond. And so what they did was they changed the rule, not for the regular season. So the regular season's still the same thing, where you score a touchdown that first possession, you win. If you just score a field goal, the other team gets the ball. But they changed the rule for the playoffs, where even if the first team who has the ball scores a touchdown, the other team still gets a chance to respond. So no matter what, you can't end the game in overtime as the first team who possesses the ball. And the tricky thing in the Super Bowl this year was that new rule had never been used, because since the change was made a couple of years ago, there hasn't been a playoff game that's gone to overtime. So this was the first time that's happened. Hence, you know, confusion.
Well, so then, well, actually, in two quick things. Are the Buffalo Bills the ones that Harry Enten used to really like?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so that's what it was throwing me, that you said they made the playoffs, and I thought they were always bad, but maybe I'm thinking of the Detroit Lions, or maybe both. But then, so then what's the deal with, like, the in-passing comment that the Niners just didn't know how overtime worked in 2024?
Well, there were some comments, I guess, that were picked up actually during the game, because, you know, a bunch of the players are like mic'd up and stuff, and then some comments made after the game from players being interviewed that they weren't totally clear on sort of the mechanics of overtime, and that, if, you know, had they scored a touchdown that first drive, because the 49ers did win the coin toss, they opted to take the ball and didn't realize that, you know, no matter what, the Chiefs were gonna get the ball back. I mean, and which in some ways kind of doesn't matter, because, I mean, you're going to try to score a touchdown no matter what. But still, yeah, it wasn't the best look.
Got it. So you're heartbroken?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I had a very sort of unique circumstance, because it was my daughter's birthday that day. And we had eaten dinner during the game, but we waited to, you know, sing happy birthday and do dessert and everything until after the game was over. And I mean, I was pretty crushed when the game ended, but, you know, had you just immediately kind of snapped out of that, because, I mean, what am I going to do? I'm not going to, you know.
Why is dad crying?
Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, storm out of the room or do something dumb when I want to be, you know, happy and have this exciting moment for my daughter. So we sang her happy birthday. That was very nice. Kids went to bed, and then I went for a long walk with my dog. And then cleaned.
With a thermos full of whiskey.
No, I you know, I actually am proud of myself. I went for a nice long walk, came home. The kitchen was a bit of a mess from you know, having people over for the Super Bowl and my daughter's birthday. Cleaned the kitchen spotless. Listened to a podcast.
You had a real solemn, just kind of like you and just like Lysol wipes
me,
and just
me and my thoughts and thinking about the last 12 years of all the heartbreaking ways the 49ers have found to lose important playoff games and Super Bowls. Yeah.
Well, they do say Niners football is torture. That's a very funny joke. Why do I get nothing here? Okay.
Yeah. But not good.
Okay. I apologize because I didn't actually mean to talk about football at all. The whole point of this was to talk about Super Bowl ads. So 8 minutes later. Again, didn't watch any of it. Are super, like, big Super Bowl ads still a thing? Like, did you watch, were you paying attention to the ads?
I was, yeah. I mean, I was pretty, you know, I was pretty locked in on the game. Not every ad break, because, you know, doing stuff to, like, get dinner ready and, like, you know, we had people over, some hosting and all that. But, yeah, I mean, I guess I saw most of the ads.
Were there any good ones? Because I remember last year's was weird, because last year was, like, the Crypto Bowl. Last year was the Matt Damon fortune favors people who get.
I think that's right. That might have been like a couple of years ago now. Yeah, it wouldn't have been last year because last year was shortly after the whole FTX thing. So it definitely wasn't last year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was at least a couple years ago.
Wasn't there one where like all they did for 30 seconds was like show a QR code or a thing?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of at least like 2 years ago.
Okay, whatever.
But anyway.
So were there any good ones this year before I use this as a roundabout way to talk about something we talked about 2 months ago?
I think I've already probably tried to like start just like blocking the game and, you know, everything around it with the commercials and stuff out of my head. So I can't really think of like an ad that immediately jumped off the page. There was a...
Were there any ads for Matter?
Not that I recall. There was one for Duncan that I wouldn't say was good, but it was memorable, I suppose.
Describe it.
Yeah, I would recommend just watching it. I don't think any description, not now, but I don't think any description I do of it is going to be good enough.
Is this the one that's basically the Goodwill Hunting reunion?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait,
Tom Brady and crazy Duncan branded jumpsuits.
Oh, the drip. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll watch this. But that actually brings up a good point, which goes into what I was originally going to talk about, which is Super Bowl ads are always really expensive, correct?
Correct.
I mean, even though linear TV is in decline, as we'll talk about.
It was the most watched Super Bowl of all time, so there's a reason the ads are still expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's because people, because Paramount Plus.
I think the numbers that came out were just linear.
It was 123 million. But because people are watching the Taylor Bowl, because that was the thing where I said Republicans would be happy. It was a unique matchup where either Taylor Swift wins or the godless 49ers from San Francisco Town win. And it was a reason for everybody to be happy.
Oh, you know, that's the other complex issue I'm still dealing with coming out of the Super Bowl is I don't want to dislike Taylor. I really don't. I want to continue liking Taylor.
Wait, is it just because she's a Chiefs fan?
I normally have a thing where like what was another example of this? Like Carrie Underwood dated, I think, like one of the or was married to like one of the Nashville Predators players, which the Sharks and them played a couple years like in the playoffs, and I kind of jokingly/not jokingly would like refuse to ever listen to her music because of that.
How dare
and
you?
I don't want to fall into that with Taylor.
Well, but also Carrie Underwood's a fucking national treasure. How dare you?
Well, yeah, I know. So I, but
music
I,
is great.
I listened to some Taylor Swift the other day, so I feel like I'm finding a way to get past it. Although it also sounds like I did not watch the Grammys, but it sounds like the surprise album announcement thing was
she had a bad week.
Not the best.
So as I talked about it, as somebody who we're not gonna talk about it, but fell out of the top one half of 1% of Taylor listeners last year on Spotify, I was in the top 2%, which I just need to rethink everything.
Right.
But no, she had a bad week. She does not need to maybe the most popular or like the most awareness of any celebrity in the world, maybe, to really use that. It was a bad look. And then she also had a thing that kind of puts her in she had a whole thing with her private jet. It's a thing. She had a bad week. But no, Carrie Underwood's great. No, she's great.
So anyway, I'm trying to be mature about all of this. I didn't make some big scene when the 49ers lost. I kept myself calm so I could be there for my daughter.
Would making a big scene entail?
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't start yelling or doing something. The only thing I did during the game was a big turning point was the 49ers mishandled a punt where Chiefs, you know, punted the ball to 49ers. They were supposed to get the ball back. It hit one of the 49 players inadvertently, and then the Chiefs ended up getting the ball. So it was like this huge turnover.
That's amazing.
And I did have to just get up and I get out of the room. And just
yell the F word into a pillow for a while?
No. I just went to the other room, took a couple of breaths, came back in.
And last thing, is a punt when you are feeling unhappy about your ability to have a touchdown, so you try to get it as far away from the other team and you just like kick it into the ether? Is that a punt? Or am I misremembering that?
We'll say that's close enough. Yeah.
What's okay. It's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like I'm more mature than I used to be.
Okay. Yeah, like eventually you'll become numb on the inside and just nothing matters. So like sports, I mean, yeah, I want the Giants to win sometimes, but just it's whatever. The reason we brought this up was that we talked about a couple of months ago. I forget what the context was, but it was about Pepsi, and there was a comedian who used to have a thing about the only time Pepsi is ever mentioned is in like an apologetic way, like is Pepsi okay? Like you're sorry you dented somebody's car. But I did not know, because I don't watch football, that apparently, so what's the name of the guy from the morning show?
Oh, come on.
What?
You know who that is.
Steve Carell.
Yes.
The guy from Scrubs, yeah. This is also the reason why I was talking about the cost of Super Bowl ads. Are all Super Bowl ads from major brands a full minute?
No, that sounds really costly. The standard spot is 30 seconds, but you'll get some commercials that go for the full minute. But the
Dunkin' one is also a full minute.
Right, but those are the exception, not the rule.
Okay, from the prestige brands. But yeah, this ad, you'll throw a link in the show notes, but it's funny. I'm not sure it accomplished what they wanted, because this is an ad from the 2018 Super Bowl and people still talk about Pepsi in a very apologetic and disappointed way. But the whole premise of this ad is Steve Carell trying to hype people up to say okay in response to is Pepsi okay, in like a confident, happy way, that they're not bummed that they're getting the number two or number three option. It's an interesting, it's not quite the whole Domino's, like, apology, we know our pizza used to suck thing. It's more, like, prideful than that, but I think it's a very interesting ad that somebody convinced, that some ad agency convinced Pepsi to be like, okay, you just got to lean into the fact that nobody intentionally buys what you sell. And I thought that was fun.
Yeah, it's too long, but other than that, it's pretty good. I like the premise. Yeah.
Like I tried to find, and that's the thing about the 1 minute thing. I tried looking to see like, is this like a director's cut or something? But yeah, I couldn't find a 30-second version.
Hmm.
So, I will bookmark, or I will try to remember to not accidentally close the tab for that Dunkin' one. You're saying it's legitimately good?
No. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying I.
Oh, then why'd you?
No, I just said it was kind of the only ad that like immediately came to mind. I said it was memorable. It definitely didn't say it was good.
Okay.
I don't think it was terrible or anything, but I wouldn't say it was a good ad. No.
Okay. And then just like I planned this, we're slowly easing into the stuff we normally talk about. So did you see a news item a couple days ago that Walmart is buying Vizio?
I did. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Vizio is a Orange County based company?
I did not know.
So I do like that Tech Meme now, they don't just index like news sources and tweets or threads. They also have like forum posts. So I did not know that this was cross posted to the r/Orange County. But the reason I found this funny is that, I don't know if you have this up, but somebody wrote on a comment, Vizio has been the budget guest room brand for a while, so them dipping even more in quality is not shocking. And then the person who replies to them, and I just thought this was funny, because is the one in your living your like secondary TV, is that a TCL?
It is, yeah.
Somebody replying back with TCL is the new guest bedroom princess. I thought that was just very, very funny.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Because for a while, Vizio was kind of the, hey, you want to be a little bit thrifty. And you get like kind of Samsung quality, but not for Samsung prices.
Right.
But yeah, apparently that's now TCL.
It's true. Yeah.
Y'all have guest rooms. That's funny.
Oh yeah, well that part's not true in my case, but the TCL part is true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving right along. You finally watched the Barbie movie. We're not going to talk about what you think I'm going to talk about, because I'm not going to put you on the spot like that.
Okay.
But so you watched it?
I did. And I
you are welcome. Maybe, if you want to talk about it briefly, let's go for it.
I don't mean to Stephen A. Smith this or anything. I'm not trying to come in with like some hot take, but like I really didn't like it. I really didn't. I actually somehow avoided like all spoilers related to the movie. So I like knew nothing about it going into it. I thought the plot was actually like pretty clever. It was not really what I was expecting. Obviously it dug into some important social and equality issues. The movie itself didn't think was funny or entertaining. And, maybe I'm just an old now, I guess, but I just thought it was just kind of goofy. And I just wasn't into it. Especially like the whole thing with like, oh my gosh, who am I thinking of now? I'm the one forgetting celebrity names now.
Well, no, but I do it intentionally. Kate McKinnon?
No, Will Ferrell. Like I totally like did not understand his character or like the purpose of any of that.
What do you mean?
He has
the most like, oh, this is not a spoiler. He was the CEO of Mattel. How is that not? Wait, how is that his purpose?
I think if you would have like taken out his character and like the whole board and stuff, I just don't think the like movie would have like changed at all. I didn't really think they added much.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I when the movie was over, my first thought was like, I was shocked that was the movie that like everybody got really excited about.
Well, I don't think people were excited that it was good, or like I don't think people were saying that it was like this is. I think are you saying good or entertaining?
Well, not that the Oscars are like necessarily the best measure of anything, but like I mean I think it was nominated for like the most or second most Oscars, including in like all the major categories, including Best Picture, and I am sort of shocked by that. Like it kind of reminds me of. That Mad Max movie. I'm sure you didn't see that. But that came out a number of years ago. And it, for me personally, it was a very, very similar experience where it was a movie that I don't think anybody had all that high expectations around. And it became this like huge hit that everybody just was raving about and loved. And it also ended up getting nominated for like a million Oscars. And I thought it was...
Mad Max Fury Road was nominated for multiple Oscars?
Yeah, yeah. Including Best Picture.
What? Was it a good movie?
It was almost exactly the same experience I had with Barbie, where in both cases, like within the first 15 minutes, I was like, oh man, like I'm not into this, but like, okay, like maybe there's going to be a plot twist or like maybe something's going to happen. And in both cases, like the movie ends, and I'm just like, man, I just don't get this.
Well, no, but Mad Max, was it at least critically well liked? Was it one of those things where people were just confused about why it was receiving acclaim, or was it just that actually everybody liked it, just not you?
The same thing as the Barbie movie. It just was not my thing.
Wasn't really expecting you to take the stand because
I'm not taking any kind of stand. I'm just saying like I didn't think the movie was funny or entertaining.
I mean, we can all read between the lines. Ryan didn't like Barbie. You know, fill in the gaps, people. I'm kidding, actually. So you didn't mention again, man, the thing that I thought would have been a spoiler. Okay. Barbie, so we all say the things that you won't say. I actually thought the movie was okay. Oh, again, no spoilers here. I thought America Ferrera's acting was very good. I thought that was a convincing and believable kind of narrative, a way to move the story along. Like I thought the Barbie and Ken stuff was actually probably less. There were certain parts that were good, but I thought like the part that occurs in the real world and America Ferrera's relationship with her daughter and the relationship to, like, I thought that was actually pretty well done. I do think, for as much as conservatives and certain types hated it as trying to like shrug it off as being like some like woke propaganda, I did not get that at all. I think it was actually very benign and probably would have been a better movie if they just leaned all the way into that.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, did the speech at the end do anything for you, or did you not really buy it or believe it?
Man, I don't even really remember what you're talking about. Is that okay, when Barbie is talking to the creator of Barbie?
No, when America Ferrera's character kind of gives the whole like 3 minute long. No spoilers. It's okay. We'll move on. No spoilers.
Yeah, no, yeah. She I thought was the best part of the movie.
But did you think she was a good driver?
Do you literally or figuratively?
How did you? Okay, the part about this movie that struck me
the Chevy EV. Branding. Yeah, no,
the Chevy EV hard heavy, to miss.
Yeah,
the most heavy-handed product placement I have seen. Yeah, in a that's when like I was like, this is why we have to talk about it, because it was, and I think it was actually a Chevy Blaze, like it was a pre-production Chevy Blazer EV.
It was, yep.
And I really wanted her to like have CarPlay set up in the car or something and be like, no, this is not accurate. No, that was the part of this movie. And I like, because product placement takes me out of a movie so quickly. Like on Curb Your Enthusiasm this year, there's also kind of weird product placement too. And it's just, yeah, it was so heavy handed.
You mean the movie Hummer? Go ahead.
The Hummer what? Wait.
The Hummer EV being in Barbie Land kind of threw you for a loop.
No. Oh, I forgot. Does Ken have a Hummer EV?
Well, yeah, like he's got it, and then like it shows up later, and then it's like half painted with Barbie colors. I don't know. I'm surprised that's not what stood out to you.
No, it was, they did like a whole, again, this is not a spoiler, like a car chase scene in her like stunt driving with a Chevy Blazer pre-production model.
Yeah.
Barbie's electric Corvette and Ken's Hummer EV are coming to Forza Horizon. Fuck, I hate capitalism. God damn it. Ugh. Okay. All right. Anyway, so that's what I was trying to keep under wraps when I was urging you to watch. Is this the EV product placement was so much.
Yeah, I picked up on it pretty early, and I had recalled reading some news article that was going to be a thing in the movie, so I was like, oh yeah, I remember they did that.
All right, I don't really have a ton to report back here, but you were expressing a lot of apprehension and a worry, or secondhand worry, about me nuking my Backblaze B2 backup. I'm in a weird spot where I'm not really using the Synology for that anymore, so what I am using is Transmit, the delightful file transfer FTP everything S3 application made by Panic for the Mac. Does natively support Backblaze B2, so I am just, because I have Comcast, over the past week and a half, I'm up to 2019. I am uploading everything manually there, and I feel like that's fine. If it's not, I'll just put an action item in OmniFocus every 6 months, upload the last few months of photos. It's fine.
This is a solved problem.
What do you mean?
Like you pulling a Casey here and like
no. Pretending what's that the solved problem?
You literally set up whatever it's called, file sync or cloud sync.
No. So, but we talked about this, is because the problem is with that, it doesn't synchronize. Like, so if I go take 1,200 photos in a weekend, and then I go through, and then 2 weeks later I go through and edit them, and I deleted 60% of them, it doesn't synchronize that. Or it might destructively delete stuff that I didn't want it to delete. So that's why I don't want to do that. And also, I am not using, because we talked about the lag and you kind of sympathize with this. So I am using just a directly attached USB 3.1 SSD because that's a lot faster for Lightroom than doing it over the network.
But why can't you use that locally connected drive, do your editing, and then there's just a final step at the end where all of your saved edited photos, you just push over to the Synology. And then,
but then how is it any different than me every once in a while remembering to upload it to B2?
I don't know. I guess moving
they into both the... They both rely on me. Because right now, the Synology is basically just for automated Mac backups, which is actually not essential at all, and media files.
It's the thing that catches the stuff that falls off the back of trucks.
It's a bunch of Linux ISOs. I can't tell if you're old enough to remember that reference.
I know what an ISO is. How dare you?
No, but people used to say that they always used Linux ISOs as code for...
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. But yeah, I'm explaining it too much. Okay. Anyway, so that's what I'm doing. What I have thought about is you can make an SSD-based Synology. Mm. It's just very costly.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of those drives in my Amazon cart, and if some there happens to be maybe a random sale that makes it more palatable, we'll explore that when the time comes.
Is that the bottleneck with trying to use the Synology for like live photo or Lightroom stuff? Is it's the speed of the drives?
I'm actually not sure about that. But also for me, it's the heat and the noise. I'm just trying to get maybe away from the Synology in general. Like, it's also, I think, the speed of the network. And the thing is, it would be so much money. Like, stuff that is 10 gig Ethernet is so much more expensive than just gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why, yeah, I think my current thing is fine. Fingers crossed, please do not, no fires in San Francisco for the next week while I'm still uploading this crap.
Does it give you a estimated time remaining or anything?
I'm doing them in batches because, as I found out, if you just try to upload like 140,000 things to B2 at once, it crashes.
It's like nah.
It nopes out pretty hard.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. We forgot something, but it's okay. All right. I don't have a ton more on the Vision Pro. Did you actually? How much did we actually talk about it? Had it come out yet?
It did come out. We talked a fair bit about the reviews and everything. The part that I felt like we didn't quite get into, and you kind of hinted at that we might get more into, was your experience with Mark Zuckerberg's favorite base computer, the Quest 3.
Can I ask a question, like tangentially related to that? Did you, whether you watched it or not, you saw the discourse around, he had a response to the Vision Pro release?
That was what I was making reference to. Yes. I've not seen it, but I've seen the discourse. Yes.
So we'll circle back because I actually forgot the other half of a show opener, but you talked about football for a while. Was there's a great profile of Steve Ballmer in Business Week last month that was very related to that. But do you think, because people are, I think, uncharitably trying to say that, oh, this is Mark Zuckerberg's Steve Ballmer flippantly dismissing the iPhone. Do you think that's what that is?
Well, I mean, no, I don't, because I don't think the VR headset market is really at all comparable to the phone market.
Correct. Thank you. Yeah, I think that's a stupid, dumb take. And I understand everybody wants to hate Facebook, and Lord knows I do too, mostly. Like I think the metaverse is really dumb. I think the metaverse is different than VR, which is different than AR, which is different than, like, it's all not the same. So I think the whole we're pivoting to the metaverse was dumb, and also not really indicative of what the technology could possibly do. I do think the MetaQuest is actually far better than people give it credit for, or maybe people just like, the thing about the Vision Pro, like, I think it's a silly product, and I do, actually, this another, sorry, there was a thing on Upgrade this week, and have you listened yet?
I'm partway through. I'm like 20-30 minutes in.
Jason had a thing where he said that his like inner cheapness was coming out when he was picking out a case for and I was like,
yeah.
I was like, really? I'm sorry, you're because you thought the exact same thought, which is, I'm sorry, your cheapness of spending $3,800 on a vanity. Okay.
Well, I not only picked up on that, but actually thought of you, because I knew when you heard that, you were going to get angry.
I wasn't angry, but I was just it was like literally just like yelling like come the fuck on as I was driving. It's fine. But also the mental picture of just wrapping a Vision Pro in like tube socks was, yeah, that's funny. Because I don't put it past him. But yeah, that's the entire frustration I have around the Vision Pro. It's not that it's not ready for prime time or that it's a limited use case. It's more that it's a toy. It's a very expensive proof of concept / developer kit / early beta product for enthusiasts, but also it's just a shit ton of money, and I do not think people can have a serious conversation about it without saying, but yes, this could be the grocery budget for a family for 6 months. Like it's just, that's the part that bugs me. So you could talk about it being the future and all those things, but it's not. At least the Quest is doing, did it before, did a lot of really interesting things, and is much more approachable, and is something that people can experience what the future might be like, still very debatable, for a seventh of the price. So that's where the whole, it bums me out. I do have to give this one back soon. I also might keep it in my Amazon cart, and if it was ever somehow on sale or some weird rebate, or there's something that made it like $350, maybe $399, I think it would be fun to have just as a thing to play with every couple of weeks.
So what's like, what's been like the thing that you've enjoyed most about it? Like, what's the use case you've enjoyed the most?
Like, honestly, and this is the part where I think it flies at odds with how people are trying to position the Vision Pro as being revolutionary, is that just like immersive media, like just watching a movie with zero distractions,
yeah,
is cool. And I've tried it like pass through in a brightly, this is the thing where I appreciate now that people have had the Vision Pro for longer, they're talking about like, oh yeah, pass through actually isn't that convincing in areas where cameras struggle. So like if you just like don't have your lights in your house super bright, like it's actually kind of crappy. But the Quest is similar, where if it's bright out or you have like the lights way, way up, looks fantastic. If it's dimmer, it looks real grainy and kind of crappy. But like just being able to have like a browser open, like it's neat. Like I wouldn't want to use it for more than an hour at a time, but it's neat. And I guess that's where I'm saying that I'm barely willing to entertain buying it for myself at its current price, and somehow everybody in Apple land thinking, okay, that with a little more polish is worth seven times the price. I just feel like there's like a certain level of like privilege and like just like lack of connection to reality that is just bananas with that to me.
So you've done the whole thing where you've made the video like look like some big, huge theater display or something, and that looks nice.
Yeah, or just black. Like it's nice to, like from somebody who struggles with kind of just like not getting distracted, but just like, I don't know, like I'll like just, I'm watching something, and unless it's the world's most interesting thing, kind of your phone just comes out and you're doing stuff with a VR headset. Like it forces you to like have like pay a level of attention that's uncommon. And it is much more like, I mean, the video quality is still better on like an OLED and stuff like that, but it's just very focusing. That's an interesting concept. So yeah, so I mean, I will look out for deals, and if I ever find one at a maybe $399 or less, yeah, I mean, I think I would probably, but that's with the realization that I know I would barely use it, but I like, yeah, it's interesting enough to me. But that's the thing where everybody's acting like, oh, this is your new travel computer, and this is the way to have your 14-inch MacBook Pro suddenly be like you're sitting in front of a 32-inch Pro Display XDR. Like, that I don't get at all. And you can throw a link in the show notes. Ben Thompson, who was very, very, very eager and excited about the product when it was originally announced, was pretty like matter of fact and like, actually, no, this thing kind of sucks for productivity. Yeah, like it just, you were excited and you were gonna do the store demo. Have you?
I have not. No.
Are you still planning to?
At some point, yeah.
Like, the one thing that I don't really understand, because, like, I don't get, like, motion sick, but after an hour of wearing the Quest 3, I'm really happy to take it off. Like, I can't imagine that the Vision Pro is that much clearer or better, where people are seriously saying, well, I'm going to use this for my work and I'm going to wear this like 4 to 8 hours a day. Like, not just like head pain, but that just feels like I can't picture that. Like, once the novelty wears off, I really, really want to know what in April, who is still using this for more than 30 minutes at a time, every, maybe a couple times a week.
Well, this was actually something I was thinking about that I should have planted my flag on, like, on the day of the release. But I mean, it's still early enough where I feel like this is still somewhat of a like prediction or whatever you want to call it. Like, I just don't think this is a product like many people are going to be talking about a couple of months from now. I don't think this is something that's going to like, I mean, you know, tech podcasts and stuff will continue to talk about it, and you know, it'll come up again a bit, I'm sure, like around WWDC time when they presumably preview Vision OS 2, and there'll be like a feature or two in there that, you know, gets people kind of excited. But I think for the most part, this thing's going to kind of just fade into the background.
Yeah, and that's where I absolutely agree, because it's not only just the cost that makes us like an extreme early adopter product, but like, yeah, I just can't imagine a lot of regular people. It's like when Phil got an iPad on Modern Family or whatever. Like, it's just one of those things, like, where I'm sure there's that initial glee and excitement about you can use this cool new thing. But that's where this, like, this is never going to be an iPhone moment. Because I can't, like, people get addicted to their phones because it's, like, a very new experience that's much richer and is always with you. But this isn't that at all, and in a lot of ways is worse, and in certain ways is more immersive and better. But like, yeah, in by the summer, I can't imagine who the devotees are, people who are going to really say, like, the Vision Pro is even my secondary computing device. Like, I don't think anybody would say that, no, I'm using my Mac appreciably less because the Vision Pro does X. I don't see it. Yeah. As somebody who's never worn one, maybe it's amazing, but based off of the comparisons I've seen to the Quest, I can't imagine it is. And also, like, I mean, the Quest has the battery built into it. The Vision Pro does not, and somehow it still weighs more than the Quest. Like, that again would be a lot of weight to wear for several hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, when you get your store demo, let me know. Or please heavily document it for the show, because I'm very, very curious.
I'm, you know, no opsec here, but I mean, you could pretty easily do that store demo, but you're no.
Oh,
interest.
No, but I don't want to. Okay. No, like, because it wouldn't be the real experience, because that's the thing where so many of the reviewers were like, hey, those super curated, like timed to the minute, like Apple demos are like, oh, here, open the Photos app, watch this spatial video. That experience is not the experience of actually using the device.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course.
Well, so then what would that tell me? It would tell me, like, hey, this, like, this super idealized form where I can look at pictures of the ideal Apple family that goes on vacation to Antigua and that lives in their postmodern house that costs $9 million in Palo Alto. Like, that's not the experience I would have with it. So I don't, that's not a tech demo or something that gives me the data points I would want.
Well, but the data points that I would want out of the demo, like, wouldn't be around do I want to buy this thing or not? I mean, I've already decided on that. I'm more curious to experience how it feels to wear. And I'm also really curious just to visually see what having like a big screen on that thing looks like. Cause I'm not a very spatial person. No pun intended. So like, I kind of have to like see
what
that stuff.
What does that mean? Or what do you mean by not spatial?
I can't really like,
or you just can't picture it.
Like, I can't picture stuff. Like I need stuff like presented to me, like drawn out or rendered or something.
All right. Yeah, but that's the other thing of like, just, I don't think after 30 minutes, you're going to be able to tell what would this be like having worn it for an hour or 2 hours. Like it's that, like putting the Quest on for 15 minutes and wearing it for an hour are very different experiences. So, yeah. If you want to go in on halvesies on one, I'll give you a 10% of the cost. Does that math work out?
Not sure. Okay. It also sounds like having more than one person use one of these things is basically impossible.
COVID's over. Kidding.
Not a COVID reference. Just like with the whole light seal thing. It just sounds it's not a device that's meant to be shared.
Well, no, and like no, that's actually your point, because somebody on The Verge had a good thing about like, there's only you and guest mode. Right. There is no like you couldn't buy one, and the wife is just like, hey, like I'm this smaller light seal, whatever. No, you'd have like every single time you do that, another person has to like do the whole guest mode calibration. Like even with all my knocks against this stuff as being like fostering solitude and like not shared experiences, it's exceptionally so, because every time you try to give it to somebody, they have to do like a 10-minute setup process. That's nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We are going to talk about two topics today. The first one, actually probably going to condense, because I actually think there's not, beyond the initial premise and one obvious secondary thought, I'm not sure there's actually a ton there. So we're going to talk about, what's the parent company of Fox right now?
Well, the part of Fox
the part that
still
didn't get sold to Disney. Yeah, yeah.
It's still just Fox.
Okay. So that them, Warner Brothers Discovery, and the Mouse Company announced like a week and a half ago that they are going to launch a sports-focused skinny bundle.
Sports Plus.
Pricing. It hasn't been officially named that, right?
No.
That's just what Matt... Yeah, calling it.
What your boy Matt is calling mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Rumored pricing to be probably $35 to $50, probably in the upper end of that. And it's going to have most sports, excluding what's on CBS and NBC and therefore the Olympics. Whenever anybody mentions that, maybe it's just, you know, in my family, that was never a thing. The Olympics, not a draw. Like I don't find that as some glaring omission, but NBC has Sunday football Sundays. What do they have? What football do they have?
Sunday night football.
Yeah, and then Paramount, CBS generally has two key games every Sunday, and then there's that weird, everything's been parceled out. So wait. Thursday night football is no longer on NFL Network. Isn't it like a simulcast of Fox and Prime Video, or is it no longer Fox at all for Thursday?
It's no longer Fox at all. So it's Amazon produced, and it's exclusively on Amazon with one small asterisk, which is if you're in the local market of one of the teams playing, you get the Amazon produced broadcast on one of your local broadcast stations.
Got it. So this is the product that a lot of people have been asking for, and these stodgy old media companies would not allow anybody to offer. So who could be mad right now? This came at it like when this, how many rotating light emojis did this generate? Like a lot. Like this is huge, because the only reason, so a term that I've gotten, or that I keep, that's getting drilled into my brain from Julia Alexander and Matt and so many other people is the cord nevers. Like they're the people, like the reason, like for what are they called? SPVODs? something like that. But like the like cable companies and the people who offer what is the traditional cable bundle, whether that be streaming like YouTube TV or your Comcast or Spectrums, the traditional cable subscription base has been dwindling like really quickly over the past 4 years. Some of those people have moved to YouTube TV and other things, and they're just doing just straight broadband from their cable company. But there's also people that have gone streaming only for entertainment, and they'll just go to a bar to watch something or lean on password sharing from a friend, or they're the whole cord never generation. And the skinny bundle here, Sports Plus, I guess heretofore named temporarily, is aimed at addressing, maybe converting some of the cord nevers, helping out the people that did cancel cable without entirely alienating and pissing off people that are subscribed to YouTube TV or still have Comcast, which is why they're worried about pricing it too low. So I guess, is this product compelling to you specifically? Do you think it'll be compelling to a broader audience? Thoughts on where pricing should be? Just where does this fit? And is this just shocking to people because it's something that people have said they've wanted and never thought would happen? Or is it actually going to change the media landscape? Please answer all six of those questions in that order.
Give it my best shot. I don't think it's interesting to me. So, I mean, I'm a YouTube TV subscriber, and it's like $80 a month, and I'd say it's a stretch that I'm getting $80 of value out of that every month. I mean, it depends on the time of year. Like certainly during like the NBA playoffs, you know, I'm using it a little bit more, and then, you know, during football season, I'm using it a bit more. I mean, I probably, and maybe I actually will actually try to commit to this, like, well, although there's the Olympic thing this year, but like I could like cancel it during the summer most years when I'm not really watching any sports, and then, you know, reactivate it again in the fall. And for me, that's probably like the best bet, because something like this that, you know, doesn't have like, you know, CBS and NBC, like that kind of becomes a non-starter. I mean, I do like the idea on paper of having some kind of option for live TV that's basically just sports, because I mean that's really all I use YouTube TV for. Like the lady friend and we don't ever watch anything else really on.
So that's what I was going to ask, because you guys are a big Discovery Plus household. Like, so like all of your entertainment, like, yeah, when was the last time you watched anything that was like you went to YouTube TV and said, I want to DVR record something that's on channel 7?
I think like, never. Literally in the however many 2 years or whatever it's been since we've had YouTube TV, I think literally the one and only non-sports thing we've ever watched on it is Top Chef, because NBC Universal's still weird about the way they handle Bravo stuff. Like they still don't put it on Peacock until like, I think it's the next day or like 2 days later or something. So if you want to watch Top Chef, like the day it comes out on Bravo, you've got to watch it through a like traditional cable bundle or something like YouTube TV. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, otherwise it's just sports. Like I like the idea of something that I could subscribe to that would be just sports, but I also, and I feel like you and I were early on this, which we've called out a few times, like understand that something like that is actually not really going to be any, if at all, cheaper than something like YouTube TV. Because, you know, this Sports Plus thing, if it actually did have everything, like if it had CBS and NBC in the mix, probably is not going to be a ton less than $80 a month. Maybe a little bit, but not a lot.
I would say it has to be under 50, like close to 50, but under, like, because here's my thing. I was like not this year, obviously, but like when the Warriors were doing well, like I wanted to watch, but I'm not paying $75 or $80 a month for Fubo or YouTube. Like that's too much. If it had been 30 or 39, yeah, I would have probably been in for a month or two. And if it was a thing where they got, oh, and that's the other thing is there's no RSNs in this.
Well, so, that was actually going to be the next point I was going to make too, is like after the initial sort of like surprise of the announcement and like starting to think about the details a little bit more, it's like, oh yeah, like your local teams aren't going to be on this thing. And so that, that's a huge gap. And that's, you know, I mean, we'll have to see kind of like, cause like in our area, there is no over the top option like for our local sports teams, and it's kind of hard to imagine given who runs our RSN local RSN that there's gonna be one anytime soon.
So well, because Brian Roberts fucking hates everybody else involved, so yeah, probably not. So that's the thing where as it's had more time to marinate and more time in the light of day, like it is tricky, but I do think it's interesting because it does solve one other problem, which is that like in our current, the reason why, like for people like us who have been mentioning like, okay, like sure, a la carte, but you're just re-piecing together the bundle just in a super ham-fisted way. But the other thing that sucks about the current streaming system is that like if I, let's say it's a really good sport, let's pretend this product already exists and it's a really good sports Sunday or something. Like if I want to go like bounce between a basketball game and a baseball game and a football game, even though I don't think football and baseball, but you get my point. Having to jump between like six different apps that all have their own weird player UI that you probably can't do picture in picture with, like having that kind of stuff in one tailored application does have a fairly strong value proposition. Where this is the thing where like I just don't like having to, like remember the future of TV was apps. I don't like having to mode shift of like, oh, well, here's how I navigate the Hulu app versus here how I use the Apple TV app. Oh, Netflix doesn't like doing this. So like, I don't like having to think about navigation that much just because I'm trying to find something to watch. And on a sports like that, a sports day, that seems even less appealing.
For sure.
So the unification with that is interesting. And that's where like it actually, the alternative to this would just be Apple could stop being so fucking greedy and they could just double down or accelerate the whole like channels vendor relationship thing and just make it easy for people to just buy stuff without them taking like just a ridiculous cut and have it all integrated into the same like silo of the Apple TV app. Like that's another way to do it, but the whole friction of everything having to be a different subscription and consequently a different app is something that makes the current situation lousier or that makes this hypothetically appealing.
Yeah, the user experience part of it, like that's, I mean, obviously less consequential than like the economics, but I think it is a big thing because yeah, right now having to bounce back and forth between apps, which you know, even on something like an Apple TV, you know, it's relatively quick to do, but you know, still is not as quick as just like changing the channel on a traditional cable box. And I think you're smart to point out that it's not just switching apps. It's the fact that each app sort of has its own unique experience. And you've got to like remember what little like quirks or whatever you've got to remember in whatever app that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not good.
And the other bit here is, well, two other things. So one, before this, because this, so two things actually. So this came out all of a sudden, and in, I forget who is this, Lucas Shaw, who did the reporting on this, but apparently the sports leagues were not consulted in any meaningful way. And that's extra funny because when are the NBA rights negotiations happening? This summer?
Something like that.
Or yeah. Probably already, but this summer. So from a legal or financial perspective, this is amusing because they now have, so TNT and ABC/ESPN and, well, I mean, Fox doesn't do basketball, but I mean, they might, or I mean, they're always possibly a bidder. Yeah, they now have fewer competitors. So that's going to drive down the potential licensing fees during a very critical time, because as the cable bundle disintegrates, that changes the economics of what people think these rights are worth. So that's kind of funny. And also, everybody else is pissed where Fubo actually sued earlier today because they, what was the term? Um, Fubo TV cites what it calls extreme suppression of competition in the U.S. sports-focused streaming market, which is true because, like, this is the thing where, again, a quality recommendation and fantastic show, The Town, like, brought up, like, oh yeah, this is a thing that people, like, that the VOD providers have been asking to be able to provide for people forever, and you've said no, we can't do it. But all of a sudden, when you want to cut out anybody else, you guys are all cool with, like, oh, like, the fire is getting hotter for us, so we're just gonna finally make this product that we denied everybody else the opportunity for making, which seems super anti-competitive and cartelish. Like, yeah, that's kind of a lot.
And well, then yeah, before go ahead.
No, go for it.
I just was going to say that that part of it is in the, you know, couple of weeks now since this was first announced, is the part that I've just been most surprised by. When I first saw the headline before reading any of the details, one of my first thoughts was, geez, like, I can't believe they convinced all of the necessary parties to consent to this to do so. Like, it just seems like that would be almost impossible to do. And so the fact that they did it, or I thought that they had did it, I was like, wow, that's impressive. But then, yeah, when it came out that, oh no, actually the leagues didn't know about this, all of the leagues, other partners didn't know about this, much, much less impressive. And
well, I mean, but I assume it's one of those things where they're like, hey, can we legally do this? And somebody is probably like, barely, probably. And then, like, it's like one of those move fast, ask permission later. But, like, I assume they knew that their licensing allows them to do most of it. And we're just like, fuck. Because what is the benefit of them asking for permission?
Well, your boy, Matt Bellany's been kind of on this, where he's a little skeptical this is, like, ever actually going to become a service. And this whole thing might have just been a way to kind of push the conversation forward, which I don't know if I'm fully sold on that. I mean, I don't think he's selling that as, like, his definitive take either, but he's just kind of floated that out as a possibility. And I do think he's right to consider that as a possibility. Like, I would not say, like, for sure that this is ever going to become a thing. Most likely, yeah, but I wouldn't say that's guaranteed.
I can't imagine they would ever come out this boldly and say they're going to offer something that they knew they do not, at least legally, have the option of making.
Right.
Like, sort of like pissing off all your partners. Like, that's not great. But anyway, the other half, like, yeah, it's just like the fact that this is a product that you denied everybody else the opportunity to make, and now you're basically just going to cut them out and do it directly and kneecap their own products, because they probably have to pay inflated retransmission or licensing rights to you. That's, I know Lena Khan's taken a lot of L's recently, but I mean, that feels like something that's not okay. But the other bit is that before all this happened, the whole rumor or thing was that ESPN was like, how much is ESPN going to cost when Iger decides eventually to make it available as a direct consumer service? And for some reason, allegedly, they're still going to do it. Why? Because, like, there's no way it's going to be that much cheaper where people are going to be like, no, all I want is ESPN stuff. Like, I can't imagine how they would price that competitively to make anybody choose that over the other one if they both exist.
Well, I think I'm stealing this from The Town as well, which great recommendation. But I mean, to pull a chef special forward here, like, which is stealing one of yours, like, I've been listening to that show. It's so good. It's great.
No matter who is the guest, even if they're not of interest to you, it's still a good interview.
Totally, yeah. Agree. There's been a couple of episodes where I've thought, like, I'm not going to listen to this one, or I'll start I'll listen to a couple minutes, but I'm probably going to tune out. No, it's always great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one of the points that they made on there was, like, ESPN is like a standalone subscription. Is like, who's that? Who would that possibly be for? Because they have such a sort of, like, smattering of sports rights. Like, they don't have any, like, significant sports rights where, like, they're the only ones. So it's like, oh great, I'm gonna subscribe to ESPN +++ so that I can watch some of the nationally televised NBA and NHL games, and so that I can watch Monday Night Football. That'd be so weird.
Going back to your earlier point, like actually maybe would they give you a rebate because you have to listen to Stephen A. Smith part of the time?
Yeah, maybe.
So yeah, that's another one. Like, fuck, like why? Like, well, the whole ESPN Plus experiment as it stands now has always been weird to me. Like, I get, like, because it doesn't feel like they charge enough for it. Like, I get where they're going, that, hey, it's got more college, it's got like kind of niche sports, but it's not, it doesn't feel like it's expensive enough to move the needle. But how, I can't imagine what the pricing on a standalone ESPN offering would be to make sense given this information. Because people were saying before, like throwing out like $30 a month. That's insane.
Well, but, and again, like who would that be for? Like who, what problem is that solving for the consumer? Okay. I just don't, yeah, I don't see it. And it's also like, this is such a good example of another thing that I think we're pretty early on with the streaming stuff is, it's like, it's when you actually step back and think about it, it's so dumb how all of these different services are just a random collection of content that happen to be tied together because they're owned by the same parent. Like there's no rhyme or reason about, like, and even like during the Super Bowl, CBS did like a Paramount Plus ad, which combined characters from a bunch of their other properties, and it's so dumb.
No, we had like, it was a thing like where there was like Dora the Explorer or Bluey, and then somebody from like Yellowstone, and then fucking who's the guy, who's the football player. The one, Eli Manning, the other Peyton Manning?
Josh Allen on the Bills,
something like that. Like, it's mm-hmm. just like that. This is like the, this is a 30-minute testament to the fact that corporate ownership of media sucks.
Yeah,
like it doesn't make any sense. But like we're running along, so let's round this out. What was the other thing? But then like going back to your like we're in this weird situation where everybody's getting so fucking desperate where, so Viacom, who I don't know if they're still merged with CBS or do they reform that whole thing, but basically their whole streaming thing was used to be CBS All Access. Now it's Paramount Plus, which is what they absorbed from the Paramount Network, which was a previously renamed Spike TV channel. They dissolved their HBO competitor that used to be called Showtime. And now that product is called Paramount Plus with Showtime, and now they introduced a partnership with Disney where it's called Hulu with Paramount Plus with Showtime. This is the dumbest fucking reality that we possibly ever could have had. You all just didn't want to pay your cable bill, and now this is what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Me and John Skipper will be on this beat forever. Okay. To be continued. This allegedly is coming out in the fall.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. I think we keep this next bit pretty streamlined. Jason Snell, even though joking about the thriftiness with which he approaches his Apple Vision Pro case, he does a very important project for the past like 7 years where he will send out around Christmas time a little questionnaire and get the opinions of the Apple tech commentator sphere about what they think about the company in a various in certain categories. I think our ballots or invites got lost in the mail.
Must have.
But we have our own show, so therefore nobody can stop us. This is a free country. So the categories that he invites people to rate Apple on or grade the year or the present situation on are the Mac, iPhone, iPad, watch/wearables, which as you'll detail used to be separate things maybe but are now one thing, Apple TV, services, HomeKit and the home, hardware reliability, software quality, developer relations, environmental, social, and I think that's the last one. So what'd you think of the Mac this year?
Well, so I guess one bit of like framing, which sure. I'd be interested to hear from you on this too. So one thing that Jason talked about, I think on the Six Colors podcast recently, is one of the challenges he's having with the survey is it's starting to feel like And I guess this stood out to him, like when he was looking at some of like the historical trends, that basically like the scorecards almost are just correlated with when a new product happens to come out in that category during the year. So like it was basically like a score of like,
he was saying there's a recency bias in the grades.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And it's sort of like a grade of like, was there anything new and exciting that came out here, as opposed to just a grade of like how that platform or set of products is doing. I thought that was kind of an interesting point. And so when I was going through and putting my scores together, I was trying to be thoughtful about that. And I mean, factoring in whether there was a new product or not, but like not having that be the primary driver of the score.
No, I definitely think everybody always kind of goes to a what have you done for me lately type stance. So no, I think about it as a much more holistic and what is this, if I never interacted with the product before or I was in a coma for the past 2 years, that type of situation.
Yeah. So with that in mind, the Mac, I rated that a 4.
So this is on a scale of 1 to 5.
1 to 5, yeah. And no half points or anything. No new Macs for me this year. I still have my M1 Max MacBook Pro. That's my work machine. And then my M2 MacBook Air. And, you know, they were both really, really solid machines this year. Really no complaints with either one.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read what I wrote because No, I sometimes get scattered with these things. I put the Mac is in a great overall position. And even though the fact that the M3 was very iterative and perhaps comparatively underwhelming to prior years, I thought it's in a really good spot. So definitely earns the score of a 4. It's irrelevant to me that the Mac Pro was a dud. Like, that's just the nature of the ARM transition. And I will happily take having a laptop that is like is as powerful in a photography like mobile workflow as like a full-on desktop computer over the fact that the Mac Pro is maybe not what people hoped it would be. So no, I think the Mac's in a great place. Two things that make it not be a 5. No new displays, and also probably none in the offing. The studio display still sucks, or the studio display is fine. The webcam is basically a potato. And even though we really disagree on this, I think it's wrong for Apple to set people up for failure by creating base configurations of products that are not exceptionally cheap, that are maybe going to lead to a bad experience for a customer. For example, the 8 gigs of RAM on a MacBook Pro.
We should debate that again now. What do you think?
No, we should. I mean, there's only so long I can talk about being right. I mean, it's a $1,600 computer. No. All right. iPhone.
iPhone, I rated a 3. I'd say my primary driver of that is, maybe this is a Carlos is right moment.
Holy shit. Wait, an hour.
I'm way less into the camera than I've been in the past. And I can't.
Why?
I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know if it's just, you know, I've had the fancy camera for kind of a number of years now, and just it's time and time again, my best pictures now are coming from that and not my phone. And those pictures, yeah, I mean, they just, when done right, which for me is, you know, 1 out of every 100 pictures or whatever, but like when done right, they're so much better than anything I can do with my phone. So I guess I've just become a little less enchanted with the camera. And that used to be, you know, I mean, the iPhone was like my only camera for like quite a number of years.
But Ryan, the 5X, it's going to change everything.
I mean, still a fantastic video recording device. Mm-hmm. But for still photography, I'm I'm not as excited about it as I used to be. I still kind of think like my iPhone 15 camera is like worse than my iPhone 14 camera.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't quite know exactly why that would be, but I just am consistently underwhelmed with the pictures that I get from it.
Because a photo is no longer a photo. The reason you don't like it, or I mean, I'm fairly confident in this hypothesis, is like the image pipeline thing that they do in the deep fusion, the overprocessing of every single photo is getting so heavy-handed where there's very little like input you have on whether a photo is good or not. Like every photo looks extremely samey. Like the sky is always too blue. Everything is either is too sharp. It will overbalance, overemphasize, and try to do like this HDR effect where you just don't get the separation and shadows and depth that you get with a traditional camera. But even so, like worse than you would on an iPhone 12. Like even though the sensor and many other things are getting better, they're doing so much stuff in software to make the camera like idiot proof that makes everything look just entirely the same.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
But you are right. Like again, I will go to my grave. Like as somebody who has a costly camera and a lot of fancy lenses, the iPhone is the best video recording device that you can get for under $10,000.
Yeah.
Like I can take out a really nice, like a 50 millimeter f1.2 lens on my Sony A1, and I will, for something that weighs then at that point, like 4 pounds and is 8 times the cost, takes worse video than an iPhone held by a 4-year-old.
Yep.
Like it is so much better.
Yeah.
Like you don't get the depth, but it's the output's so much good.
Right. But you know, I mean, it's positive, some positive things. Like I do like the titanium frame of this year's phone. It really does make the phone quite a bit lighter. I think the action button is a good addition. But yeah, I mean, other than that, very just kind of average iPhone year.
The iPhone is a 4. The 15, in my opinion, is the most minor and iterative upgrade to an iPhone in a very, very long time. Because I don't have the Pro Max, the titanium weight difference isn't as much for me. And I mean, I do think that's an improvement, but the 15 and the 14 Pro are so similar to the point where there could almost be no difference to them. The 15 has some exclusive features to it that don't need to be, like the fact that it takes by default 24 megapixel HEIF encoded photos. That is a feature that's reserved only for the 15, not even just the 15 Pro, the regular 15. It did not make its way down to the 14 Pro, even though it absolutely could have. That seems lame. But yeah, the 15 is just an extremely minor upgrade to what is a very good product, generally, other than the overprocessing of photos. This probably goes more with software reliability than anything else, but like, I mean, I don't think the action button gets to be cited as a good thing because I have it set to the camera shutter and for like fucking 3 months, it wouldn't open the camera. So I'm not sure it gets credit for that. The 15, like, it's fine. The iPhone, like, if somebody said like chop off your pinky or have to use Android full time, I would probably lose the finger. iPad,
I rated a 3. Obviously, not really much to say about the iPad this year. There were no new models, not really a ton going on in iPad OS. I guess my personal driver for this rating is that, you know, I still have a 2018 iPad Pro, and it still works perfectly fine. I never notice it being slow. Battery life still seems fine. And as you know, I'm somebody who obviously normally, churns through Apple products and technology products pretty fast. So for me to still be like perfectly happy with a, you know, almost 6-year device, I think is a, well, kind of a testament to how good that 2018 iPad Pro generation was and still is, because the current day iPads, at least for the next month or so, are still basically the same thing.
I mean, that could also say that nothing's really happened. I mean, the fact that the old one is really good compared to the current thing could also be a statement about the current thing.
Well, I
absolutely agree.
It's lukewarm praise, hence the three.
I mean, cause like, other than like the fact that I think the new ones have like LiDAR for some reason, like, yeah, it's basically unchanged other than the fact that it's a little bit faster, because the Pro 11 inch, even the newest one, still doesn't have the nicer screen, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I give the iPad a 2, and this doesn't have anything to do with the fact that there wasn't any new hardware this year. It's just more over that the iPad stinks for anybody who's not an illustrator. I don't think anybody could find reason to debate that. Like my iPad, I have two iPads. One I use for crossword puzzle. That's literally it. And the other one I use as like a music player controller. My issue is that we had talked maybe a few months ago about the fact that I was butting up against the 64, because I was cheap and bought the 64 GB version of the iPad Air, and I'm out of space. And if I want to buy one with 256 GB of memory, it would cost over $800. And I think that's my problem with the iPad. It's not that the iPad lineup is confusing and cluttered and duplicative. I mean, it is, but it's a bad productivity device, and it's too expensive for being as lousy as it is. Because unless you buy the super crappy iPad with the home button that they've made forever, to get an iPad that's more than 64 gigs of memory, regardless of which version it is, you're almost at $1,000. And the iPad isn't good enough to command that price. And that's what bothers me about it. It's not a good, it doesn't come close to touching the Mac in terms of productivity. It's not as robust and essential as an iPhone. So does, why? Unless you need pencil support and to draw on it, I cannot think of why anybody should be spending money on a new iPad.
Well said.
Watches.
The watch, I gave a 2.
Mm.
Did not think this was a good year for Apple Watch. The primary driver for that low number from me is watchOS 10. I just don't like watchOS 10. I still every darn time click the crown when I mean to touch the side button or vice versa.
No, you're clicking the right thing. The software disagrees.
Still have not figured that out. Widgets don't do anything for me. Like, that was the big selling feature, and they've reoriented so much of the OS around widgets, and I just have not found them to be useful or interesting at all. You know, they have the whole new like app design that they want everybody to adopt, and you know, because nobody really cares about watch apps anymore, I think I have 2 apps. I think Carrot Weather and Streaks adopted that new design, but I don't know that any of the other apps that I use at least regularly have. So yeah, watchOS 10's just been really disappointing. And I, you know, like we said at the top, I've tried to not weigh the fact that there just wasn't any new interesting hardware to weigh down a score too much. But I do think that the watch is worth dinging a little bit for that, because, you know, watchOS 9 is effectively the same watch that we've had since, I think, like Series 6. I think it's been like 3 upgrades now where there's basically been no change to the watch. So I'd like to see a bit of a refresh at some point there.
Okay. I think Series 7, it's been relatively unchanged. Because the Series 7 and Series 8 were basically exactly the same thing. Like, it just added, like, car crash detection. And Series 9 added, like, the S9 chipset. And that's what allows you to do that stupid pinch feature that nobody actually uses.
Oh, and then, yeah, that's the other thing, is the, like, the marquee...
You're mad about that, too?
The marquee feature of this year's watch is sort of like a nothing burger. Oh, and I also actually did forget another key thing. This is what I get for not having everything as written down as you do. There are no good colors, and that's impossible that they make all these different watches and all the colors are bad.
That was part of my that's supposed to be part of the iPhone. Yeah, it's a 4 because the colors still sync. I just got black because I'm gonna have it in a case, but like no, colors of all their products stink.
Yeah, well, and that's how I feel about the watch. Like I've learned to except the muddy gray or whatever it's called, stainless steel watch that I have, but I don't love the color, and there are no other good ones.
And going on the little, like, the pinch to accept the option, I'm too proud for that. I still use my nose every time because it's silly. On the Apple Watch, I gave it a 3. I actually disagree with you about a lot of it. This is, if I was able to break this into subcategories, I would say the hardware is a 4, inclusive of everything, and the software is the drag, and that's a 2. So I don't get the people clamor. So like Mike's whole thing on Upgrade about, like, he thinks the Apple Watch Ultra 2 is like what reinvigorated his love for that. Like, get out of here. But like the Apple Watch is a very mature product. And unless there's some revolutionary, like, what else are they going to do to it? Like, is there some hardware element that you think is extremely long in the tooth? Because that is the one thing that did change from, like, when was the always on screen announced? A Series 5 or Series 6?
I forget.
But, like, it's been a few years. Like, each year they've made the screen a bit brighter and they've brought the screen way out to the edges. I wouldn't say the Apple Watch has any sort of bezel. So I'm not really sure what they could do. I mean, the battery life is fine. I'm not sure what else they could do with it. That's not going to be a leaps and bounds like upgrade. Like, what's missing for you?
I don't know if there's like a specific feature that's missing for me.
You're bored? I mean, and that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, that's valid.
I am. Yeah. I guess I would say with both maybe the watch and the phone, like, because I am somebody who upgrades every year or, you know, close to every year, the newness of the hardware maybe is something I weigh a little bit more in those categories.
I don't want to say this uncharitably, but I do think you're bummed that people can't tell you have the new one. And I don't mean that in a vain way, but like, you, sight unseen, nobody can tell the difference between a Series 9 and a Series 5 unless you're an extreme nerd. Is that maybe a tiny bit of it?
No, I honestly don't care about that. I just want to be personally more excited about that close to annual purchase that I'm making.
Okay.
I would say with the hardware, it's actually mostly about the colors. I guess if there's one specific thing I would call out as being changed, it'd be the colors.
Well, I guess what would you want?
A black watch, like the black titanium watch that they made was perfect. That's what I want.
Answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like graphite steel.
Why is the stainless steel not just black? I don't understand that. Why is it a brownish muddy gray?
It's not brownish. It is a very graphite metallic stainless steel. This has been my color, and I've been happy that Apple's lousy color choices forced you into it too. That's great. I'm proud of it. But the only other thing is, so the software's a 2. I fucking hate WatchOS 10 so much. It's not that it's buggy. It's just that it sucks. Everything they did and changed about it is a regression. The fact that other than the fact, like, what would ruin my life, what would make me really upset is that they somehow change. Because the only thing I actually know and remember how to do on this dumb watch is how to invoke Apple Pay. Like, everything else, I always touch the wrong button. Like, I just want to know how to get to the Spotify controller and the like the workouts app. and I can never figure it out. And I spin the crown and it's doing stuff. It's showing me these useless ass widgets that don't do anything that I don't want. Like, the software stinks.
As a big timer person, I'm surprised you didn't mention the timer.
That app sucks too.
Yeah.
When it came out, I went on for 20 minutes about that. The timer sucks too.
it's shockingly bad.
With the wearables thing, sorry, the only other thing, because I think AirPods count in this section. Make a new version of the Beats Fit Pro, you cowards. Like, because I have two pairs of those. I don't like the AirPods Pro. I just want adaptive transparency with them, and they haven't updated that product line in 3 years. They're the best wireless headphones you can buy, but I want adaptive transparency.
I guess if we're doing wearables here too, I rated that a 3. I'm pretty happy with my regular AirPods and AirPods Pro. Sound quality in the AirPods Pro in particular is really good. I still don't feel like they fit me 100% correctly. That consistently is like the one bummer on AirPods Pro. Like, no matter what ear tip size I use, it just feels like if I like almost do anything when I'm wearing them, if I smile, if I like say anything, like any minor little thing kind of jostles them out of position, and that's kind of annoying. But otherwise, I really like them. Mm-hmm.
You might need a different light seal. Services. this week's episode was a lot. All right, services.
It's a 5 for me. Okay. Two reasons.
I'll shut up. Okay.
Reason number one is iCloud's rock solid, and I think it doesn't get enough credit for how solid it's become and just how incredibly useful it is. Like, particularly the online backups of your phone just makes transferring to a new phone so easy. It makes the possibility of, you know, losing your phone, you know, much less of a big deal. The automatic photo backups also really, really great. Yeah, I big iCloud fan. And then the other thing driving this is the fact that Apple bought the rights to all the Peanuts stuff, and they make absolutely delightful Peanuts original programming that this entire household has been super into the last couple months.
What's his name? Susu?
Susu, yeah.
Okay. I think other than paying for Apple One, you could also just go to the Charles Schulz Museum in Santa Rosa. That would
we'll definitely need to do that, yeah. But yeah, the Snoopy show is fantastic. Snoopy in Space was a lot of fun. It's good stuff. And I think Apple TV Plus is super solid. I finally watched Severance this last year. That's great.
You finish it?
I did. Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of All In?
I thought we talked about this in person. I thought we did. I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good. Like, no spoilers, but fantastic plot twist and a good ending that makes me excited about the next season.
I see as a 5. Okay. Hard disagree with that one on Severance. Okay. Services are 2. I do not think Apple TV is the new HBO at all. They make a very specific type of content for a specific type of person. Almost how much stuff do they make that's not sci-fi other than Snoopy? Although Snoopy is in space. That's also sci-fi. Like, Apple TV Plus is a vanity project for a computer company. If that's fine. I'm sure Apple TV does not make money and will not for a very long time. The services overall, I think, are kind of, not talking about the reliability, they're middling to being a bad value. Like Apple TV, almost every Apple service got a price hike recently. Apple Music is now $11 a month. Apple One for individuals, I think, is $20 a month. Apple One Premier for like families is $38 a month. The storage tiers are still stingy. If you pay $20 a month to Apple One, it's only 200 gigs of storage space. I just don't think it's a good value. And I think if we're broadening out, not just thinking about the year and thinking about Apple holistically, the services push has brought out the worst in Apple and has made them a worse company and has made most of the products worse. Do you think that's unfair?
I mean, yeah, I do. I mean, I think starting with like the value piece, I think you're right, $38 it is for Apple One Premier, like the family plan, which is what I have. Like, I easily get way more than $38 of value from that for both the lady friend and I to have our phones, including photos, all automatically backed up, to both have access to Apple Music, to have access to Apple TV Plus. I actually think Apple News is pretty decent. It's not my primary news source by any means, but it's something I check in on once a day or so, and I think it's pretty good. I think it's a really good value.
Yeah, strong disagree. Like, I have to pay 2 terabytes of iCloud space for $10 a month. Because they don't offer anything in between that. And it's not even that. So there was this really good post on Threads that I just sent you a link to that really, the push for services revenue and Apple's deviation away from just thinking, hey, we make a premium product that we sell for a premium price that carries a premium user experience, is no longer the core of what they do. And I think search ads are like the greatest embodiment of that. Where this person, who's a software developer and a photographer, but that he would happily pay Apple $2 a month. So the quote is, "It's wild to think that I'd be happy to pay an extra $2 a month or whatever to Apple to never ever see an ad in the App Store again, i.e. having to have the thing I'm searching for be the first result. I'll die on the hill that App Store ads are one of the worst product decisions the company has ever made and undermines a lot of their supposed value proposition of a gated App Store universe." So many things about the quest for ancillary revenue on top of the product that they already sold you has led to Apple making a worse experience. From the fact that you get pitched Apple Care Plus upsells in the Settings app, I am constantly nagged every 2 months. Do I want to use Apple Cash? No, I don't. Do I want to sign up for an Apple Card? No, I don't. But I'm constantly having to dismiss crap. I get notifications on the Activity app telling me I'm still eligible for a free trial of Fitness Plus. I don't want it. Like, I paid you $1,400 for a phone. We should be done. Like, that's the thing that, like, I think that has made for a crappier user experience for everybody, and services is a toxic part of the company. HomeKit.
HomeKit's another 5 for me. Yes, smart home stuff is bad, so I have to preface this with that. But within the smart home category, I think HomeKit's the best thing going. You know, this year, I mean, I guess I forgot to mention this with the Apple TV part. You know, we're now a multi Apple TV household, having one connected to both TVs now.
Oh, you gave up on the Roku?
I didn't give up on it, but like I wanted
primary HDMI.
I wanted the new Apple TV with the Thread radio for the whole smart lock thing, which we talked about a few episodes back. And you know, the Apple TV that was previously connected to the OLED was still like perfectly fine, so there's no reason to like just get rid of it. And so we just moved it to the living room. And the Roku stuff is good, but the Apple TV is just so much more responsive and everything. But anyway, yeah, I mean, HomeKit, you know, I am basically entirely on HomeKit now, like for all of the holiday smart plugs and stuff that I set up. All of that was incredibly rock solid this year once I dumped all my Waymo stuff, which we previously talked about. And those Waymo, whatever. And those TP-Link plugs that I replaced the Waymo stuff with, were super, super rock solid, and you know, managed all that in HomeKit. the smart lock that I now have is really, really good. And that's like literally, you know, as I talked about when I was setting that thing up, like I still haven't downloaded the Schlage app. Like that's all just all being done through HomeKit and the Home app. So yeah, HomeKit or smart home stuff in general is bad, but HomeKit is pretty solid.
HomeKit gets a one. We talked about it. I still can't share my home with another Apple ID. The invite just literally doesn't work. And the only solution, according to Reddit, is to nuke my home, my entire home setup, and just try over and hope for a better result.
Yeah.
No, that is not the makings of a five.
Yeah, that's
bad. If we gave half points, I would say 1.5, because like a few months ago, I did kind of go all in on the home app. And I do think, I mean, I use very little of it compared to you. I do like that I'm able to get out of home control for, because I think I use the most basic elements of HomeKit, which is I use the Wemo plugs and I use Hue lights. And both of those can be controlled in one app as opposed to two. And I didn't have to do anything extra to set up out of home support. So I guess those are the only two positive things I can say about HomeKit. But the fact that I can't use it on another Apple ID, because the home invitations just go out into the ether and just are a dead end, sucks. So no, one. And then I think we skipped over this. Apple TV, the device itself. Did you give that a score?
Oh, maybe that's why I didn't.
I think we kind of lumped that into wearables or into services, but no, but like actually the box will make this.
Oh yeah. Fast. So I made that a four. And that, you know, mostly for me was, you know, moving to two Apple TVs this year and having that be a good experience. They have a neat feature, which I think has been around for a while now, where you can keep your Apple TV home screens in sync. Mm-hmm. So if you have multiple Apple TVs and you download a new app or you like change the order of the apps on your home screen, like all that stays in sync between the two boxes.
And does it share logins or do you still have to log into each media app separately?
You still have to log in separately. Yeah. So that part's not great, but yeah, I'm still, I mean, Apple TV is still way, way too expensive, but it is the best streaming box out there by quite a margin, I think.
Apple TV, the box, three, big bonus points for continuity camera this year. But big minus for the fact that, like, I don't know if it fixed itself for you. Like, it's gotten better for me, but I have to reboot it a bunch because it just stops outputting optical audio. Like, I haven't had to do that in the past couple months, so maybe there's a software update for that. But for a while,
optical audio. You mean like HDMI?
No, because mine goes HDMI from the Apple TV to the OLED, and then optical audio to my Bose soundbar. And I would, like, we were having the same issue, maybe just a different type of it, but like there would be a thing where it would just stop outputting audio until you restarted it for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That did get better on mine. I haven't had that.
Yeah. But I mean, for me, I have to knock that down where if I have to reboot the box a bunch for no fudging reason, just to be able to hear sound, that's kind of a negative. But I mean, for services revenue, I finally signed up for Apple TV because me and somebody wanted to watch Slow Horses, which is fine. The Apple TV Plus app favoring its own content is really annoying. But like, I mean, I never used Apple TV like that app to watch stuff in the first place, so it's a little lost on me. So it doesn't bug me that much. But yeah, continuity camera is a great addition. The fact that you can't hear out of it for September to December, it was not great. Reliability.
Maybe a good segue into hardware reliability. I rated that a four. I had the same kind of weirdness with the action button on my iPhone, which, well, I guess that's maybe more of a software thing, but it's a hardware feature. So tomato, tomato. But yeah, I mean, across the board, like no major hardware issues this year.
Yeah. A 5 for me.
Yeah, I guess I could have been talked into that too.
Yeah. Software quality.
I went with a 3 there. I don't think you and I have not talked about this. I don't think. My score is colored. I guess this technically happened in 2024, so I'm cheating a little bit here, but I just recently had a iOS update fail.
Did you get that thing where it says like it's trying to like data recovery?
I was going to say, and would just, again, no OPSEC, but it makes sense that you would maybe know about that. Yeah, I've never had that happen before. I've never even heard of it before. And I wasn't really even like paying much attention to the update as it was happening. And then I look over at my iPhone and it's like a white screen with like a black Apple logo. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And it's like data recovery something. Mm-hmm. And so I like frantically go on to Reddit, and like everybody's response was basically the same there, which is like, yeah, I don't really know what this was. It was really scary. It took about 30 minutes, but then my phone came back and it was just fine. And that's what happened with me.
Same, but I was just so, I didn't really trust the iPhone for a week because I was like, am I going to have to do like a restore on this? Because I was like, because data recovery in progress means really it's like defragging your hard drive. Like, it really sounds like it's trying to, it does not inspire confidence of everything's mostly okay. It's more of like, oh, yeah, no, that happened to me like a week into having my 15. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. So didn't love that. The other weird software issue I've had, which actually seems like is finally fixed now, I was having an issue with my work machine, my M1 Max MacBook Pro, where whenever I would wake it from sleep, when I would go to open or load like a new web page in Chrome, it would just hang for a while, like 10 to 15 seconds. And it was only ever when waking from sleep, and it was only ever like the first website, and everything after that would be fine. And, you know, I did all the obvious things like reinstalling Chrome, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that issue was really annoying, but it was sometime relatively recently seems like it's been finally fixed, whatever weird thing that was.
Maybe that wasn't even an Apple thing, so I don't even know if I'm... Or you don't really know whether it's an OS X issue or a Google issue.
Anyway, 3.
Software quality, 3. Again, the two things we already talked about, like these aren't hardware related. The camera launch issue, which for me is a huge pain in the butt. The Apple TV glitches, like it's not good, but like I feel like Apple's just adding a bunch of stuff that doesn't actually matter. Like I don't care about iMessage stickers or SharePlay. I would like you just to make the software work better. Like I don't think there have been like a ton of like showstoppers, but it's rough enough around the edges, and a lot of the stuff they're adding is not actually useful. Like on iOS, do you like the contacts poster feature?
I've not set one up, and I don't have any contacts who have either, I don't think. So no opinion on it.
But the contacts app is now worse. Like if you tap on somebody's contact entry, you see way less of their information now because it's trying to reserve all the space for those a feature nobody uses. Like they're grasping at straws of what to add, but they're not fixing some of the core stuff. So like while there are no like real showstopper bugs, it's kind of meh. 3. All right. 2 to go. Developer relations.
I really don't have a strong opinion like on these last two. And the dev relations one's hard because when I was thinking about it, I was thinking about all the like the 27% commission stuff and like the DMA stuff. But like that's actually all 2024 news. So I actually like can't even really remember what happened with dev relations just within 2023. So I rated it a 2, but I think that was mostly because of stuff that's technically outside the time frame we're talking about here. But otherwise, that's don't fine. Really have a strong opinion. So I'm not a developer.
Balmer would be disappointed. Mm-hmm. 1. 1. 1. Apple does a lot. Like, Apple continues to not understand that a robust app store ecosystem and great apps are what make their product so valuable. And they just do not have the appreciation for that. And their hubris and greed will eventually catch up to them. It's probably going to take a while, but one. And then environmental and social.
I just put three, as I don't really have any any specific thing or story that came to mind that would drive a different score.
One. I don't think carbon neutral products are that interesting. If Apple cared that much about bettering the environment, what they could say is this year there's no iPhone 16, and that would do more for the environment and the world than anything else they could possibly do, but they won't do that. Apple, in terms of societal impact and social good, real cozy relationship with China. You can't turn on the pride watch face in Russia. They do a lot of stuff that's not great. And I understand you have to think of, like, how do you do the most good? How do you partner with certain governments and make the most good for the most people? There's a lot that goes into it where Apple is not a perfect company, and they, yeah, there's some challenges there. A one. Anyway, overall, actually, just to round it out, was 2023 a good year for Apple?
It felt like a relatively uneventful year.
Felt like they were treading water. The 15 was just such a minor upgrade, very little happened. Like, I mean, I guess if you just discount the Vision Pro, almost nothing happened in Apple land.
Well, but the Vision Pro didn't come out until this year, so that's not really even a 2023 thing.
Yeah. All right. Any trailing thoughts or chef specials?
I think chef specials. And I already gave mine earlier, which is a copy of one of yours from last year, I think. The Town. It's great. Such a good podcast. And the thing that I also appreciate about it, almost always about 30 minutes, which is great.
Oh, yeah. He's real concise.
Mm-hmm. So smart, man. He just, like, so plugged in.
Mm-hmm. And I always like how he opens the episode with kind of like a 90-second, here's, if you don't actually know what we're about to talk about, here's what you need to know.
I so agree that those openings are, they're so good. There's, like, not one unnecessary word in them.
Mm-hmm. So going forward, you're going to have to write up a little speech for every episode?
Yeah, I'll work on that.
I don't think I have anything, so we're just going to go with that because this is a super long episode.